On episode 477 of the 40 Plus Fitness podcast, we meet Brad Kearns and discuss the book he co-authored with Mark Sisson called Two Meals a Day. You can find the full show notes for this episode at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/477. Have you decided you're ready to make a change? To reclaim your health and fitness? The 40 Plus Fitness podcast is here for you. I'm your host, Alan Meisner. I'm an NSAM certified personal trainer with a specialization in corrective exercise and fitness nutrition. Let me be your coach as you find your way on your health and fitness journey. All right, let's go. Hey, Raz, how are things going?
Good. How are you today, Alan?
I'm doing okay. You know, it's been some busy times, some really busy times. the 12-week program is going on, and I'm just loving that. I draw so much energy from those guys. I can't tell you enough how much fun it is to just see it. You know, just be working with people, and then you know the gym's open, and it's been a slow grow, but it you know just I was sitting there on Sunday, and I was kind of just thinking about the month, and you know. Thinking about the month because we're record these a couple weeks in advance, but I was doing my month end accounting stuff and, you know, you just go out there and start looking. It's like, you know, this was not a bad month, you know, our February, we reopened on the 1st. And I said, you know, this was not a bad month. You know, it's not a great month because we don't have the tourists. So the drop-ins are gone. I think that was about 1/7 of what we would normally see for drop-in revenue. But the membership was strong, and we've got a lot of new members and faces that we didn't have last year, you know, when we closed. So I felt pretty good about where the gym's going and how that's growing. And I was sitting there, it's kind of a blessing for this slow grow because it happened and it was still generally a good month. It wasn't overwhelming, you know, at the gym. I think that was kind of the cool thing. But you know, like everything else, we've got to be careful with COVID because as we start getting bigger, you know, I had one night I was working a shift and we had 7 people and they were all in the free weight section. And so it was just a little crowded back there. And I was like, okay, I can't let anybody else on this side of the building. If someone wants to go and do some of the cardio equipment or on the other side, then they're more than welcome to go in there. But if someone comes in and they want to lift weights, I'm going to make them sit on the bench and wait. But, you know, just to make sure we didn't get things too crowded in there. We don't really have a capacity limit, but I kind of learned that we kind of do have a capacity limit. When it comes down to just everybody being 2 meters apart,
right?
We just have to be responsible about that. So, you know, if you are going to the gym now, your gyms have reopened, just be cognizant of the 2 meters, wipe down your machines before and after you use them. And just, you know, just use good hygiene around this. And for the most part, you're probably going to be successful at not getting it. So
for sure. Absolutely. That's great. Good to hear that.
Yeah. How are things up north?
Good, good. We actually had a break in the weather, which was nice. And over the weekend, I had a little win myself. I actually surprised myself. I did a 10K, which is not a huge thing for me, but I was challenged in the month of February to set an FKT, a fastest known time, within this community I participate with online. And so I chose my normal 10K route to do my FKT. And my prior time for this route has been about 1 hour, 4 minutes, 1 hour, 6 minutes or so. And we've had snow, so that kind of is an difficult thing to get through. But we had this break in the weather and the sidewalks were clear. So I set out to do my 10K and I thought, okay, I don't know if I can do this, but I'm going to pretend it's a race day. And I set out and I ran smoothly on the downhills. I ran relaxed on the uphills. And when I got home and turned off my watch, I had a 58-minute, 47-second 10K. So I actually beat my proposed time of a sub-hour 10K. So
awesome.
It was a win. And thank you. I was really surprised. So it was a good day.
Well, good, good.
Thank you.
Awesome, awesome. That has to feel really, really good.
It does. It does. I've been really focused on training for my 50 miler that's coming up this summer. And so that means a lot of slow miles. So I'm not used to running fast. So again, that's another reason why it was kind of a surprise for me.
Well, good. And, you know, and sometimes that's kind of the way these things work is you're not expecting it and you just have a really good run.
It was.
But you got to be out there running to have a really good run.
That's right. So got to do it.
Good on you.
Thank you.
Not letting the Michigan weather keep you indoors.
That's right.
You know, so you're trained and that's and it showed. So good job. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right. Are you guys ready to talk to Brad?
Yes. Let's do this.
Our guest today is a New York Times bestselling author, Guinness World Record-setting speed golfer, number one ranked USA Masters track and field, age 55 to 59 high jumper, and former national champion and number three world ranked professional triathlete. He has worked with Mark Sisson to promote the Primal Blueprint lifestyle with books, seminars, retreats, and online multimedia education courses. In 2017, their book, The Keto Reset Diet, became New York Times bestseller and briefly held the number one ranked overall best-selling book position on Amazon.com. He hosts the award-winning Get Over Yourself podcast, covering health, fitness, peak performance, personal growth, happiness, relationships, and longevity. He also hosts weekly shows on the Primal Blueprint podcast. With no further ado, here's Brad Kearns. Brad, welcome to 40 Plus Fitness.
Alan, I'm so happy to be here. And I have to say that was one of the best warm-up chats of any podcast. We are on fire right now. The listeners have no idea what's coming. So brace yourselves, everyone. If you're listening at 1.7 speed like me, turn it down to 1.0 because we're going to hit this stuff hard, man.
Yeah, Brad and I kind of have a lot in common with the kind of people that we like to talk to. And so with his podcast and my podcast, We're talking to maybe even talking to some of the same people. And we just realized we're both going to be talking to the same guy, and it's a pretty fascinating book. So stay tuned to this podcast for a while. Go check out Brad's podcast because we're going to be bringing on Dr. Pontzer, and it's going to be an awesome conversation. But this is also going to be a tremendous conversation because Brad, you and Mark wrote the book Two Meals a Day: The Simple Sustainable Strategy to Lose Fat, Reverse Aging, and Break Free from Diet Frustration Forever. And I have to say, you know, I had followed OMAD. You know, I've known about OMAD for a while, and I've known about time-restricted eating. And so you guys are approaching this from a perspective of being told we have to have six meals a day to lose weight is fundamentally flawed. We should give our body time to not eat, to not feed. And two meals a day is kind of one of those sustainable ways where I think people, when I look at OMAD, I was like, I don't think I could do OMAD because I don't think I could eat enough calories in one meal. But looking at two meals a day and thinking of it as an eating window, whether it's 6 hours or 8 hours, I quite easily could have a moderate sized meal and then a big meal, get all the nutrition I need and really kind of do that and allow my body 16 to 18 hours to kind of do all the other cool stuff that the human body can do for itself.
Yeah, well said. I think we've been programmed since we were kids to be dependent on dietary carbohydrates as our primary source of energy. And anyone can reference this if you've ever felt terrible after skipping a single meal and then you have the afternoon blues and you're tired and cranky and you finally go and binge on way too much junk food when you get your hands on something when you go to the supermarket and go shopping. So the idea here is that we want to continue to honor this evolutionary model of how humans are meant to operate, and we're meant to have stored body fat as our primary source of energy. And that's why we store so much of it and are so good at storing it. And this is going back for millions of years where the human never had regular meals until recent times, recent generations. And so by sitting down to these regular meals like clockwork, we've transitioned away from being fat burners to being carbohydrate dependent. And it's really easy to reprogram the genes. It doesn't take that long. Your body's ready and willing to become better, more competent at burning body fat and being able to skip meals. And I think most listeners who are into this health awareness know all this and can nod their heads, and they've heard that fasting's great and intermittent fasting is the latest buzzword. It just passed keto on the Google search terms as the most popular diet search term. But here's the thing that we take the trouble to go in the book and say, look, you can't just jump into this and expect all these wonderful benefits if you don't engage in fasting properly. And so if you try to go and skip breakfast because you read this book, Two Meals a Day, and it says, hey, only eat two meals a day, it's way better than eating three, you're going to have what we might call a stress hormone bath. Because if you're dependent on carbs for your energy source, and then all of a sudden you restrict them because you heard about the keto diet or you want to skip meals and lose weight in this ill-advised manner, what's going to happen is you're going to get your glucose, your sugar, no matter what, because that's what you're used to burning. And so you'll do it through this stress response that we call gluconeogenesis, which is converting lean muscle mass into glucose to fuel that ravenous brain that needs to burn glucose primarily throughout the day. And so the approach here is to, transition in a smooth and comfortable manner, so there's no more struggling or suffering or all these deprivation mindset and physical symptoms that we associate with dieting, because that is the failed approach that we can all agree is it doesn't work. And so now we have an agreeable, doable and sustainable strategy that's not painful. It's just about making good choices and understanding, what the body's meant to burden as a preference.
Yeah. As humans, we love simple. Everybody loves the simple rule. It's like, okay, if this, then that, we like to the ability to kind of wrap our mind around things that are simple. What a lot of us don't understand is that the human body is extremely complex, and that our body developed strategies to accomplish things outside of norms. So there would be a normal way things would be. Normally I would like to be able to walk around and there's a fruit tree. I grab some fruit and I eat it. Oh, and there's maybe a little woodland creature and I decide, okay, bash it in the head and now I've got some meat, or I go catch some fish and I eat some fish. And that's my day. I'm moving about a good bit of maybe probably walking around, a little bit of a fast action, because that critter's not going to just stand there. And the fish is definitely not going to just hang out and say, here, grab me. So there's a lot of work involved in getting my food. We don't have that today. So, where we had these simple ways of things were working for us, we've developed other ways. And so what I'm kind of getting at is, you bring up a concept in the book that I think is really important for people to understand, is that we have metabolic flexibility. Our bodies develop this capacity to look at fuel in different ways depending on what our circumstances are. And when we're feeding ourselves carbohydrates all the time, it's basically energy in, and then what little bit of energy we can put out is great, but the rest of it's becoming excess body fat. And we're maybe not even tapping into that body fat because we never really gave our body an opportunity to even consider that, because we've fed more carbohydrates in before that ever happened. Can you talk a little bit about metabolic flexibility and how that closed loop system actually helps us maintain a really good, just basic health?
Yeah, thanks. So what I described at the outset is really metabolic inflexibility, where you are dependent upon these regular doses of carbohydrate and other food as your energy source. So metabolic flexibility implies that you can really take or leave a meal at a certain time, because body fat is always there and able to be burned for energy, and keeping your focus and your mood and your appetite all stabilized throughout the day. And people who are a little bit familiar with the ketogenic diet, the goal there is to restrict carbs to the extent that your body starts making this alternative internal fuel source called ketones. The liver makes ketones as a byproduct of fat metabolism when carbohydrate intake is really low and liver glycogen is really low. So you're prompted to make this wonderful fuel source that burns more cleanly than glucose, and your brain preferentially burns ketones. So you're in this kind of heightened state of alertness and you feel great and you have less inflammation and you get all these benefits from the ketogenic diet. It takes a lot of structure to do so, because once you start consuming eating a little bit of carbs, you stop making ketones. But just as you teed this up, we have so many different ways that we can burn energy and sustain ourselves and even function at peak levels without having these super duper nutrient bomber drink juices that you need to drink in the morning to get your antioxidants. The body manufactures antioxidants internally, and the internal antioxidant response is possibly more powerful than anything you can consume in a bowl or in a smoothie. So just by fasting, we get all these health benefits. We have a great inflammatory response. The immune system works better. Our cellular repair process work better when we're not eating, because we can devote the energy to these other things. That's why animals fast when they're sick, and humans should too. So this metabolic flexibility concept goes to not only getting good at burning body fat, but also if it's time for your child's 12th birthday at Chuck E. Cheese and you decide to throw down some breadsticks and a hot fudge sundae afterward, that your body can process that load of unhealthy junk food, and you'll live to see another day, and you'll wake up the next day and, let's say, engage in a fasting period to get back to your baseline of fat burning, so that you can handle not only, you know, dietary imperfections, but also be skipping meals. So that's the flexibility part of the equation there.
Okay, we're not recommending Chuck E. Cheese, but, you know, by all means.
This show is not sponsored by Chuck E. Cheese.
Not at all. You know, not at all. I understand you go there with your kid. It's there. It smells what it smells like. And but one of the things you get into the book that I think is really important, and this is where, you know, I'll be having a conversation with a new client, and they'll be like, okay, you know, I want to lose some weight, and this is kind of my go-to. I haven't looked at it from this direction. I always just talk about, you know, okay, well, eat whole food, just whole food. And that solves you 99.9% of the problems. In fact, whether I'm talking to a vegan or a carnivore or anybody in between, the one thing they all agree with is eat whole food. You know, they may disagree on whether it needs to be all plant-based or it needs to be all animal-based, but at the end, that's what they're after. You look at it from the other kind of the other, in the book, you looked at it from another perspective. You called them the three big toxic modern foods. Could you talk a little bit about those?
Yeah, you just remind me now that there is something we all agree on, because for years before the emergence of this carnivore movement, which I'm really fascinated by and have seen some amazing healing stories from people eliminating plant toxins, but previously we all agreed that the wonderful, colorful fruits and vegetables are the basis of a healthy diet, even if you're a vegan, even if you're a paleo person, and now even that's called into dispute. So it's like, oh yeah, we still agree that whole foods are better than processed foods. I guess unless you're pitching your energy bar or your powders and potions and things like that. But yeah, good point. So whole food would be a great starting point. And then I forgot your question now.
Oh, it was the three toxic modern foods.
Yeah, the toxic modern foods. Yeah, and I think it is a great place to start, because a lot of the research now is revealing that the magical, wondrous benefits of the various diets are mostly what the person is eliminating, rather than the amazing transformational powers of going on a vegan plant-based diet. In fact, we pretty much trying to be polite and not cross into the boundaries of you know, the faction building and all that. It's a high-risk diet because you're eliminating a whole bunch of nutrient-dense foods. So same with carnivore. People have, you know, all kinds of criticism for that, saying that it's unbalanced and you're going to drop dead of colon cancer and a heart attack. So all those challenges aside for a moment, if you just get rid of junk food, you're probably going to experience an incredible health transformation. And that's where a lot of these leaders of whatever it is that they're touting, you know, can kind of attribute this amazing success stories, is that any transition away from the standard American diet, which Dr. Lauren Cordain cites research that 71% of the calories that we consume today in the traditional diet are completely absent from our evolutionary experience. So they're processed modern foods that are nutrient deficient and calorie dense, things like grains, things like sugars, and refined industrial seed oil. So those are the big three right there. And I probably should put up at number one the refined industrial seed oils, because those are sometimes overlooked. People all know that sugar's overconsumed and we got to cut back on our sugar. The paleo and the ancestral movement knows that we call refined grains sort of in the same category as sugar because they're quickly converted to glucose as soon as you ingest them. They don't have many nutritional benefits whatsoever. And so we have grains, sugars, and the industrial seed oils, which are the bottled, manufactured oils like canola, corn, soybean, sunflower, safflower, et cetera. And then the prevalence of these oils in processed foods of all kinds, frozen, packaged. You can look on the box of anything that's pretty much of a manufactured product, and you'll see these oils included in there. Even salad dressings, condiments, things that seem innocent, the oils are thrown in left and right. And then, unfortunately, almost all restaurant food, starting from junky fast food, of course, where you're getting your fries and your burger and what have you, or getting stopping at the gas station and getting some, you know, some quick fare off the shelf. But even at medium to fine restaurants, they are most likely cooking these wonderful meals with you're paying a good money for the entree in the refined industrial seed oils. A lot of people call them vegetable oils. And so that's a challenge because when you're out there, you can't go back in the kitchen and see, but you can ask and inquire, can you please cook my omelet in butter or something besides vegetable oil? And if you don't succeed there, you might want to find a different restaurant because this stuff is the most toxic thing that's in the food supply. As soon as we consume them, we experience an immediate disturbance in healthy cellular function, especially in the cardiovascular system. So the big problem here too is that the ingestion or the inclusion of these oils in the diet renders your fat burning capabilities dysfunctional because the agents are integrated into healthy fat cells. And so they become difficult to burn because you have this chemically altered component into your body. And so if you have trouble burning stored body fat, guess what's going to happen when you try to cut back on dietary carbohydrates? It's going to be difficult, if not impossible, because you're going to be dragging ass in the afternoon and you're going to need some quick energy because you're not kicking into fat burning. And that's, I think, where a lot of people have suffered and failed with devoted dietary restriction. I mean, we interact with these people for the past decade where, you know, we'll be putting on a live event or retreat. And I see people coming up to Mark Sisson with tears in their eyes saying, Mark, I got your book 3 years ago. I've done everything you've said to the letter and I can't succeed. And I feel terrible. And a lot of it's because of the chemical ingestion that's throwing off your metabolism. And then you don't have this wondrous gateway to the fat burning lifestyle where you can fast, you can enjoy meals, you can get up from the table. You feel alert and energized and all these wonderful things. So the seed oils would be the number one thing to really scrutinize and get rid of immediately. And then with the grains and the sugars, we know that these agents have addictive properties. The great work of Gary Taubes, Dr. William Davis, best-selling book Wheat Belly, talking about the addictive properties of the GLAD and protein in modern-day wheat and gluten. And so this stuff is also nasty because when you try, and I'm making air quotes here on the video, when you try to cut back on sugar, you have a very difficult time. So what we advocate is, look, take a few weeks. 21 days would be a great benchmark to have a complete restriction of grain sugars and industrial seed oils from your diet. And that will help you upregulate the fat burning genes so that you can manufacture energy internally and feel okay without slamming down meals and snacks all day long. And so this kind of devoted cold turkey approach seems to be the way to go because these foods are so addictive. Now, is that going to be difficult? Yeah, it's going to be tough for many people. But a lot of times we hear people saying, stick it out, hang in there. Yeah, the keto or the low carb flu is really tough and you feel terrible, but don't worry, 3 weeks from now, you'll feel okay. And I strongly reject that that ideal, because if people are struggling and suffering with a dietary transformation, something is flawed with the approach. And so instead, if you agree to ditch these big three toxic modern foods, what you can then do is transition over to beautiful, delicious, lavish meals that sustain you and nourish you. And in my own personal example, 13 years ago, when I switched over to a primal ancestral style eating, I traded in this giant bowl of cereal that I'd had every single day of my life. You know, I used to be an endurance athlete. I was burning many, many calories every day. So I'd have this giant horse trough bowl of cereal with five different kinds. Of course, all the healthy kinds of cereals, but I'd have non-fat yogurt on there and sliced bananas and berries and, you know, a ton of calories. So I traded that for a gigantic omelet that I made every morning. And I would use five or six eggs and saute the vegetables and have sliced avocado and salsa and cheese and bacon. And it was incredibly delicious. And it sustained me for many hours, but it wasn't giving me that carbohydrate bomb. But that made my transition smooth and easy and enjoyable, rather than, let's say, trading in that cereal bowl for a fasting period of 4 hours. I honestly couldn't have done it. And I was a healthy person without metabolic damage that a lot of people are bringing to the table. So if you can replace the processed food with nutrient-dense foods, it's in most cases, you're going to feel great. There's not going to be any suffering involved, and you're being looking forward to your next nutritious meal, and then build that momentum to where at a certain point, in a natural and graceful manner, you'll probably be able to skip, like, you know, I was finally able to skip that omelet every single morning, because 6 months later, I felt great, and I wasn't super hungry as soon as I woke up.
This episode of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is sponsored by UCAN. On the podcast, we often talk about low-carb and ketosis as a way of managing your metabolism and how managing your blood sugar is key for weight loss and avoiding metabolic dysfunction. But how do we fuel a hard, long workout? I remember having a conversation with my trainer about low-carb, keto, and fasted workouts. He was skeptical. I was getting stronger, but on my heavy days, especially when I was doing more than 6 reps per set, I would get winded and need longer rests than programmed. Had I known what UCAN Superstarch does then, I would have performed better and likely gotten even stronger. Most pre-workouts have sugar and stimulants that give you a big boost, but that is inevitably followed by a crash. UCAN's patented Superstarch is different. Superstarch has the remarkable ability to provide a steady release of energy without spiking blood sugar. UCAN energy powders and energy bars are delicious and provide all the energy I need to make it through an intense training session. I wouldn't touch a pre-workout, but UCAN Superstarch checks off all the boxes to give me the energy I need without the downsides. I'm also a fan of their electrolyte powder, UCAN Hydrate. Go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/UCAN and use the code 40PLUS to save 20% on your entire order. Make UCAN Superstarch your competitive advantage at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/UCAN.
Yeah, I think, you know, the kind of the worst part of this is the food that's good for us doesn't have a marketing department, but the food that's bad for us does. And so you're going to see things on labels like heart healthy, like you would with cereal. And then, of course, you're going to see this this salad dressing you just bought. Not Mark's brand. Mark's brand is it's avocado oil. It's good stuff. But other brands, you'll see that they'll say they've got olive oil or they've got, you know, that. And you'll look at the actual label and, you know, they do have that in there. But they've also got the seed oils in there. So it's in there. It's insidious. It's in everything. So the challenge becomes now I'm asking someone to go into their kitchen and throw all that stuff out. And for, I would say, the vast majority of people in the United States, particularly, you're asking them to pretty much throw out their entire pantry, clean out their entire fridge, and in many cases go through their freezer and go through all of that stuff. And that when you start to realize how much there's, like, you know, 71% of our total calories is coming from this stuff. So when the kitchen purge, to me, is one of the probably, you know, as I talk to people, that's one of their most intimidating events. How does someone wrap their mind around, I'm throwing away all this food?
Yeah, I like how you frame that.
And
yeah.
I can do the food in air quotes, I guess.
Yeah. Michael Pollan calls it, quote, edible food-like substances rather than food, this processed 71% junk. But I like how you frame that question, because maybe we should do it backwards. So, you know, first we go shopping to the natural food supermarket and we get the sustainably raised eggs and meat and seafood and then whatever fresh produce you like or things that are on the approved list. And so you have that, like, let's say waiting in the wings in the back of your car, and then you go throw everything away into the garbage can and in a 5-minute binge of cleaning out that house. But yeah, I can see that we're locked into routines and have difficulty with big change. But I think the restocking of the pantry with nutritious foods and maybe browsing, you know, we have 40 recipes in the back of our book. And if you just flip through it and in a minute's time, you'll see, wow, this stuff looks great. It's delicious. It's varied. And so there's so much you can do. And there's so many cookbooks now that are honoring the low carb or the ancestral approach. And so there's no shortage of ideas. And for gourmets, that's great. They can go and look at the 31 ingredients and prepare a recipe that takes 2 hours. But for busy people, or a lot of times, you know, I encounter, like, my male peers aren't so gourmet in many cases. And so we wrote a couple cookbooks called Keto Cooking for Cool Dudes and Carnivore Cooking for Cool Dudes. And we purposely, you know, made it not precise. You just throw in a little bit of this, a little bit of that, put some sardines in the skillet, crack a couple egg yolks, mix it up. And, you know, you can get these superfood meals without much time or energy or scrutiny. And so that's the big one, is nourishing yourself with wonderful, delicious foods. And doing it immediately so that there's not this lull where you don't know what to eat, you're fidgeting around, and then you kind of reach for a really bad choice because your body's commanding you to consume calories. And that's no joke. I mean, a lot of people are, you know, starting out with a lot of discipline, motivation, willpower, and then it cracks because, as we talked about offline, the human brain and the hypothalamus is, when it's hungry, there's nothing that can, I mean, you're going to be pushing people out of the way to get something to sustain you. So we have to do this in a strategic manner, and setting up those good meal habits is the big one, like I discuss with my omelet or whatever you want to put as the example.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the keys. You know, when we talk about, you know, 2 meals a day or time-restricted eating, this is not like you immediately just jump in and say, okay, I had dinner tonight at 7 o'clock and I'm not going to eat again until 2 o'clock tomorrow. That's typically not how this works. There's a transition period to doing time-restricted eating. And I like one of the things that you guys used an acronym called WHEN, W-H-E-N, which is... when hunger ensues naturally. So it's kind of letting, still listening to your brain, because you know, invariably your brain's right. If it's telling you you're hungry, you're actually probably hungry. And if we try to not listen to it, then it's just too easy to fall back on old habits. And, you know, there's McDonald's. I'm driving by, my windows down on a beautiful day, and I'm like, God, you know, I can smell it. And if you're not answering yourself when you have control, now you're in a situation where you probably don't. And so how does someone go through, because I know you guys have a plan in the book. You also have the recipes, which, thanks for mentioning that, by the way, because I did want to make sure those are in there too. How does someone go about approaching getting to 2 meals a day?
Yeah, good question. And I think WHEN is a really easy strategy to get your mind around. And it's not intimidating or fearful. So when hunger ensues naturally, we have to make sure that we really are talking about hunger. And I think what we have today is boredom, prolonged periods of stillness with our lifestyles, especially working on the screen. And a lot of these things can mess up our metabolic function to the extent that we think we're hungry, but we might just benefit from going out and running 2 flights of stairs and returning to that default fat-burning state that requires a little bit of movement throughout the day. So there's research showing that if you sit still for as little as 20 minutes, you will experience a noticeable decrease in glucose tolerance and insulin resistance. So in other words, you stop burning fat really well, and you start to, you know, lose a little bit of cognitive function. The oxygen delivery, the blood circulation, everything kind of goes down because the body does not like to sit still for long periods of time. And so when you feel that decline in energy, we associate that with hunger, perhaps, and then we go get an energy bar out of the drawer, and we get a little boost for however long, and then another drop, and we go on this roller coaster all day long. So I think I'm kind of jumping without answering the question fully, but we do have to include those lifestyle elements into this picture. It's not just about your food choices, because if you're sitting there all day long in a chair, you know, not trying out this wonderful stand-up desk craze, or thinking that you're too busy to take a 1 or 2 minute break every 20 or 30 minutes, you're going to have real trouble adhering to a dietary transformation, especially getting rid of that those carbohydrate foods that provide quick energy. So back to trying to answer that question and integrating this concept of when hunger ensues naturally, this implies that whatever fasting periods you're going to engage in, you're going to feel comfortable. You're going to have stable cognitive and even physical function in the absence of that meal. And that includes perhaps a workout some days, where you can wake up in the morning, go through, even if it's a light workout, like a cardiovascular session at fat-burning heart rates. You want to feel good and strong, and that you're not desperately needing calories to complete a 20 or 30 minute workout, maybe someday an hour workout, or maybe a 20 minute high intensity workout, where of course you have the energy stored in your body to complete it, but we have to kind of play it out in a natural and comfortable way. And so once you clean up the diet and get rid of those three toxic modern foods, we don't want to talk about anything. You can drop off this podcast right now, or you can close the book at page 71 or whatever, if you're unwilling or you haven't accomplished that goal, because that's the gateway to a fat burning lifestyle. So once those foods are out of the picture, you're making good choices and you're having these nutrient dense meals, then you can kind of tiptoe in this direction to say, okay, how about if I wake up and wait around until hunger ensues naturally, and that will be kind of a checkpoint as you do this exercise and see how long you can comfortably last before your meal, which is the exact opposite of the cavalier approach that you just mentioned, to say, okay, tomorrow I'm going to suck it up and I'm going to wait till 2 p.m. and that's going to be a 16-hour or an 18-hour. We want you to kind of back into everything. So if you are keeping a food journal and you like that accountability, you write down when you ate after the fact, because that's when you were hungry and you decided to eat, as opposed to saying, I have to make it till a certain time, otherwise I'm going to drop off my, the A list on my plan here. So simple, sustainable, like we say, and doing it at the right time when you really feel you're ready. And so let's say you wake up and at 8:30 in the morning, your stomach is growling. And the reason your stomach is growling is because the prominent hunger hormone ghrelin is making it growling. So growling is an actual, it's not just fun and games. It's an actual biological response triggering hunger. And a lot of times the circadian rhythm is a strong influencer of this. So if you start skipping breakfast as part of this lifestyle transformation, you may experience these spikes in hunger in the morning because your body's used to eating at a certain time of day. Maybe it's 2 in the afternoon when you always have your energy bar and soda break in the break room. And so you might experience hunger spikes, even though it's more circadian than that you're actually out of energy and you need food. So we have to kind of learn to be more nuanced and more intuitive and see what our body's capable of. And you'll probably find that you're way more metabolically flexible than you even dreamed of, even right now. And then after 3 weeks of dietary restriction, getting rid of the junk, oh man, it's going to open up an amazing world of possibilities. And you and I know about these extreme enthusiasts where, you know, people will go on 5-day fasts every quarter and 24-hour fasts once a week. And it seems like unimaginable to the average person. But when you get down to it, we're all pretty good at this stuff. We're all humans. And just, you know, if you have the ability to be patient and, you know, keep those junk foods out of the diet, you can really awaken some good fat burning potential.
Yeah, there was this time, and I've told this story on the podcast a couple of times, but I was, I had some property and I went out there to do some work and, you know, just got up in the morning. I wasn't hungry. So, you know, I eat when I'm hungry. I don't even think about it unless I'm hungry, then I'll eat. For the most part, I might have a meal in the evening because only because I know if I don't, then I'm going to want to eat much later. And that's just not going to, from a timing, doesn't make sense. But for everything else in my life, I'll just eat when I'm hungry. So I went through and I went out to my property and I finished the work. So I drive my tractor back onto the trailer and I'm going to leave the property and my truck gets stuck. So I call AAA to come pull me out. Well, he comes out there about an hour later, you know, which is what they kind of promised. So he was on time. Then he went to pull me out. His truck broke. So he had to call for a part. And so I just went ahead and grabbed it. The reason I had this property was I had some fishing ponds there. So I'm like, I'll just go do some fishing, you know, catch and release stuff. So I'm out there fishing. And it took him like 4 hours to get his truck fixed. And then so he finally gets me out. And then I'm driving back and I'm thinking to myself, it's 6 o'clock already. And I had a pretty tough morning work, you know, doing the work I was doing. It was not easy work. And I wasn't even thinking about food. And, you know, before I kind of got into what I'm doing with, you know, keto and fasting and just paying attention to the food I'm putting in my mouth versus eating what is there, I would have been chewing off my arm. But I had that flexibility we were talking about. I had the freedom that provides to basically say, I know when I'm actually hungry and I know when I'm not. And for a lot of people, it's kind of an interesting feeling because they think they're always hungry and then they actually feel full when they eat because they're eating, like you said, the high nutritious, high quality foods. And they know what it feels like to actually be hungry because they let themselves actually get hungry before they ate again.
Right. And, it is a wonderful feeling to experience hunger and then go satisfy that hunger with a great meal. And a lot of us are hugely disconnected from that because we just sit down because it's lunchtime and we're going to go have a business lunch. And then when we get home, of course, we're going to honor the dinner time and the family gathering and all that stuff's great. And when we wake up in the morning, of course, we got to get some food before we rush off to our busy day. But to rethink this and kind of open up the floodgates to a different, you know, alternative lifestyle and different choices like that. And then to realize that missing a meal is a positive check mark in the direction of metabolic flexibility. So we can kind of relax, especially I know a lot of health conscious people that are trying to cover their nutritional bases every day and make sure that they eat enough protein and make sure that they get their superfood antioxidant smoothies in and all this stuff. So to kind of recalibrate that a bit and realize that fasting is probably the biggest thing you can do for an immediate health boost. It beats any superfood ever known to mankind. And so skipping a meal is no big deal. And it's a positive step in the direction of health. And then you can kind of turn eating into one of the great pleasures of life as it's intended to be, rather than another stop at the gas station as if you were a race car and just needing to refuel all day long, which is basically the story for most people, that it's just fuel and calories, a lot of times empty calories, but you need them. Otherwise, you're going to feel like crap at 3 p.m. at work and you're not going to get all your work done before 5.
Yeah, we leave second breakfast away. We don't need a second breakfast. We might not even need the first one. There was another concept in the book that I thought was really important that I wanted to bring up because a lot of people, you know, we're busy. We've got a lot going on in our lives and we're looking at the clock and we're thinking, you know, I wanted to get out of here and go get my workout in, but I just don't have that hour. I need to stay in the office for another half hour to get some work done. And then, I got to go pick up the kids and we got to go do this. And my life is just this out of control kind of thing. But you came up with, you have this concept where you talk about micro workouts. And I think so many people are stuck on the, I have to work out for 30 minutes every day or an hour every day, or I might as well not do it. Can you kind of talk about micro workouts and how we can make those a part of a healthy lifestyle?
Yeah, thanks, Alan. I got a big smile on my face because this is, I think, one of the greatest breakthroughs that we've seen in fitness in this century. I know the century is young. It's we got a lot ahead of us, but really the fitness industry as a whole has been stuck, has been mired in this no pain, no gain, struggle and suffer mentality. And most of the programming is based on this idea that if we crush you hard enough, you can high five your workout partner at the end. We can put you on the commercial and you'll order this expensive indoor bicycle or join the gym or continue with the package with your trainer who's urging you for more reps. And so for the people that are really into fitness, hey, it works fine. You know, I used to be a professional triathlete. I trained all day long for a decade of my life and I loved it. And I traveled around the world and I mixed with other athletes who also loved riding our bicycles 100 miles through the mountains. And that was all fun and games and great stuff for us. But so many people have been marginalized by the traditional approach to fitness. And you walk in the gym, 63% of people are intimidated when they look over to the free weight room, and another 27% are intimidated when they look in the window at the boot camp class where the lady's screaming and urging you for more and more, jumping up and down. And you're like, wow, I'm not even in shape enough to conceive of doing something like that to my body. And it's true. It's just... It's catering to the fitness extremist already. So for the average person who, just as you described, is busy, might not be a fitness freak, maybe they didn't feel like an athlete when they were a kid and they're just on the outside looking in, this concept of micro workouts can appeal to everyone who wants to be healthier, not necessarily a fitness freak, but just, you know, have that baseline level of physical competency to get through life with more enjoyment and less risk of injury, especially as we get older. Falling is the number one cause of injury and death in Americans over age 65. Falling, not you pick something else. I mean, like, come on, falling? You kidding me? But that's what happens when we go into steady and prolonged demise. And so the micro workout conveys this idea that in a minute's time or 2 minutes' time, you can do a miniature little burst of explosive physical effort wherever you are. You don't need a lot of implements or contraptions. You can right now in your work cubicle, drop for a set of 20 deep squats or however deep you can take them. And even if you're a fit person, when you get to 17, 18, 19, your legs are going to feel it. So in 1 minute's time, you can get a nice miniature little workout. And the benefits are tremendous. One of them is it breaks up these prolonged periods of stillness that are so harmful to our metabolic and cognitive function. So even a minute's burst of running up a couple flights of stairs, like I said before, or doing a set of deep squats, or I have a rule, I have a pull-up bar over my closet door. And it's like a supply closet. So every time I go in there to get another Post-it pad or whatever it is, I do a set of pull-ups. That might happen once a day. Big deal. It's not going to mess up my big workout that's planned for tomorrow. Maybe I'm recovering from something and I don't want to push myself too hard today. But a single set of pull-ups is nothing to write home about. I don't have to write it in my fitness workout log or anything. But if you talk to me 365 days from now, and I say, yeah, this is my daily pattern. And oh, by the way, when I throw the garbage out, I have to go through the side yard, and sitting there in the side yard is a hexagonal deadlift bar with a moderate amount of weight on it. Nothing to write home about again to the muscle heads, but let's say there's 200 pounds on that bar. And my rule is every time I throw the garbage away, I do at least one set of deadlifts and then I go about my busy day. Maybe sometimes I'll get into it. I have some free time and I might do three or four sets and make it something that's a little bit more significant. But this very low bar to jump over to enter the world of a fit, healthy, active person is what we need to progress with in the overall approach to fitness. And I think the micro workouts are so fun. It can be something that you enjoy. If you have poor competency or technique, you do something as simple as possible, like doing a squat or running up your flight of stairs, walking back down, running up again. And of course, we're so busy, we can't devote any more than that. That's fine right now. But as it becomes part of a daily habit, and you start sprinkling these things in over time, the amazing thing happens is that you're kind of, it's I call it like flying under the radar, but building your fitness. but without that huge risk of breakdown, burnout, illness, and injury that occurs when you immerse yourself into the mainstream approach to fitness. And that's that person that signs up for the personal trainer package on January 1st, and by April Fool's Day, their shoulder is aching and they're going to go get an MRI, and they've finished their package and they're burnt out and they're fried and they don't like it anymore because it was too physically grueling. So this is a way to kind of tiptoe to even really fit, just from, you know, sprinkling in these little sessions that don't bother you. So they're arguably safer and less downside risk than a devoted fitness regimen. And furthermore, the emerging science in exercise physiology and general health study is that the obligation to just move more in daily life is ranking above adherence to a devoted fitness regimen for all manner of health and disease protection, because we're so still and sedentary that even the fitness freaks, there's this idea called the compensation theory of exercise. So it's a scientifically validated phenomenon where they've studied people that do adhere to a devoted fitness regimen. So let's say that's that neighbor of yours that rolls out of there before it gets light to go to their spin class every morning at 6 a.m. and they're really, really into it. But then they go on the subway, they commute, they sit at a desk all day, they come home, and they binge on digital programming. So they're still in sedentary for hours and hours every day. They showed that this population of devoted fitness enthusiasts who are otherwise sedentary had the same level of metabolic disease risk factors as people who didn't exercise. And you can think, look, even an extreme fitness person who's training an hour every single day, that's 7 hours a week, okay? There's 168 hours in a week. So if those other 100 plus hours, of course, we need to sleep, so we got to take a third of that and be still. But if you're engaging in all the sedentary lifestyle patterns, the exercise is not going to help you. And instead, we just have to move more. Mark Sisson coined this term JFW. It stands for just effing walk. And that would be the centerpiece of a more active lifestyle. And you can get more health and even fitness benefit from walking more versus going and punching your gym ticket even more and pushing yourself really hard once in a while or an hour a day.
What I like about those is it's something, like you said, you can fit around your normal workday. So you're sitting at your desk and, you know, you want to get up to go to the restroom or, you know, go get some water or something. And so you just sit there and say, I'm going to pop out, you know, 5-10 squats, you know, bodyweight squats. And the other cool thing about them is because these are things that you're adding to your day, you can really put a little bit of forethought to them and say, I want these to be functional exercises, not just something like, you know, a spin class where I know I'm burning calories, but quite frankly, you're saying, you know, squats, the fundamental movement. You talked about deadlifts with the hex bar, fundamental movement to build strength in your legs, strength in your core. You know, all of these things that we were, even pull-ups, you know, there's some function to being able to climb, going upstairs, you know, again, all of those are functional movements that you're building into your day that might otherwise not include any workout at all. So I just like how that can be a part of every day. You can just have those triggers. You can be doing squats while you're brushing your teeth. You know, so there's so many opportunities for you to do these types of things in your day and not having to think that you have to dedicate an hour or it's wasted. I just like that concept.
Yeah, I was just talking to someone the other day about this, and they're expressing a bit of interest. How do I throw these in? I spend a lot of time at night watching my TV shows, he said. I said, well, make a rule then. If you're going to binge watch, at least in between every episode, drop for a set of 20 push-ups or squats or whatever. You know, put some rules in place, because I think, hey, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I fill my mind with these great ideas. Do I execute on every single one of them? No, I don't, because I'm just too busy or whatever my excuse is. So in this case, what worked for me really well, Alan, was I wanted to kind of raise the fitness platform from which I launched my formal workouts, because I've been a longtime fan of sprinting. I'm obsessed with high jumping now. I compete in the old man's masters high jump track and field.
No,
and
55 to 59 is not old man. I refuse. That's right. I refuse to accept that.
I'm slotted in that division, whatever you want to call it, man. But so I'd go out and do these awesome workouts, let's say once a week. And they're pretty tough. And when I get to the track, I'm all pumped up and I'm competitive and I feel great. But of course, I learn over the next 36 to 48 hours, I kind of pushed it too hard there and my calves are screaming in pain now and I'm really tired. And so what was happening was I wasn't approximating that big challenge very frequently because I couldn't. I had to rest and recover and then go hit it once a week again. And so what I designed was this morning routine of flexibility, mobility, core strength, just a fun little thing that's predicated to help me with, you know, the muscle strength and mobility I need for sprinting and jumping, let's say. But I threw this in and decided to do it every single morning. Again, not that strenuous, but it you know, chips away at my fitness without interrupting my busy day and what have you. And so I'm on a streak now of over 4 years where I have not missed a single day of this wonderful morning flexibility, mobility, strengthening routine. And it started out as something really modest because I wanted to have that low bar to jump over to tell myself, I'm going to commit to doing this. I'm not going to miss a day. And again, it's not too much trouble. I'm not dripping in sweat at the end. But to have it as part of my lifestyle where I don't even have to think about it now, and I get through this. It used to be a 12-minute routine, and now it's a minimum of 35 minutes. I know that's not doable for many people, but whatever you have to commit to. So if you can say, hey, I'm going to give the first 5 minutes of my day, and I'm going to do the yoga sun salutation sequence. You can see that on YouTube. It's the foundation of a yoga class where you stretch, and then you compress, and then you sweep, and you do these movements. But if you can say that you do that every single day, we'll count that in this micro workout category. And then everything else flows from there because now you've built into place this rule that this is now part of your lifestyle. It's non-negotiable. It's going to become a habit. And then you'll, you know, set yourself up for more success doing these little tidbits that we described about, you know, lifting the deadlift bar when you go throw the garbage can away. So I want to make sure the listener can take away something that's so simple that they might even scoff at how easy it is to implement this new commitment of 5 minutes a day. Or let's say, you know, put a sticky note on your computer or your office door and say 40 squats before you leave the office every day. And if it's 4:57 p.m. and you're clocking out at 5, I don't know if it's a home office or you're leaving, whatever, and you haven't done it, then you got to do 40 right there. No big deal. But if you do 10, you know, on the 90 minute break, you set your little timer, then it's nothing. And so we have to put rules in place because it's easy to let these things slide. And if the goal is really modest, boy, that's when I think we can build that momentum. And that's what's happened in my life with my morning routine.
Brad, I define wellness as being the healthiest, fittest, and happiest you can be. What are three strategies or tactics to get and stay well?
Whew. Okay. Number one is implement that morning routine and make it 5 minutes. Don't even go beyond that until you get into a good groove. So that one's, I'm really strong at. It's been a life-changing thing for me, especially because I'm not a template regimented guy. I answer to myself. I work for myself. I work from home. And so I can do whatever I want every day. But this thing has really anchored my day. And the fact that I can do that and tell the public about it, I believe it helps me become a more focused and disciplined person in every other way for the rest of my day and all the distractions that I face. So morning routine, number one. Number two is ditch those big three toxic modern foods. Do it for 21 days. And what you'll discover is you'll dehabituate away from this nibbling on sugar and grain-based high-calorie snacks. Your body will actually feel better, even though you're giving up what you think are these precious things that you can't do without and that you deserve so much after working that hard day. Of course, you deserve a pint of processed ice cream with chemicals in there. Even hippie trippy Ben and Jerry's products have vegetable industrial seed oils and some of the flavors. I couldn't believe it when I saw it on the side of the box. So ditch the big three. And then you ask for three, right?
Yes.
Number three is don't take on too much. So just do the first two.
There you go. I like that. All right, Brad, if someone wanted to learn more about you and Mark Sisson and your book, Two Meals a Day, where would you like for me to send them?
Oh, thanks. We have this cool landing page called twomealsadaybook.com. And you can get, they're called pre-order bonus items, but even as the book has been released just before the show came out, you can still get our cool pre-order bonuses. There's an audio summary, a recipe PDF, and a discount coupon to go shopping for healthy condiments at Primal Kitchen. And then if you go over and visit bradkearns.com, you will be regaled by wild and crazy videos like my morning routine. You can learn what I do and watch me break the world record in speed golf. Don't worry, if you only have a minute and 38 seconds, that's all it took for me to play the fastest hole of golf ever played. And I'm trying to promote all these healthy lifestyle practices that we live and breathe every day. But I also think it's important to put in a vote for having fun and having a lighthearted approach. So you'll see me kind of being silly. Same with on my Be Rad podcast. I like to inject that sense of humor and not taking ourselves too seriously as we try to improve our lives and optimize in so many different ways.
You can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/477, and I'll be sure to have all the links there. Brad, thank you so much for being a part of 40 Plus Fitness.
Thank you, Alan. Great show. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Welcome back, Raz.
Oh, Alan, what a neat conversation. Brad seems like a really energetic guy.
He is a very energetic guy. And yeah. For those of you that don't know what speed golf is, I mean, that might have went right over your head. But basically, speed golf is a sport where you hit the golf ball off the tee, and then you run to the ball. And they basically add your strokes to your time of the run. And so the secret is to run it really, really quickly, to quickly hit the ball again, but be generally accurate, because you don't want to be running all over the golf course and then get the ball in the hole. And he managed on a par five, basically to get a par four, a birdie. And he did it in just over a minute and a half. And I don't know that I could even just run from the tee to the hole in that amount of time. But, you know, I just know when I played golf, you know, the walking, because I'd be on one side and then I'd be on the other side and then I'd overshoot the hole and then I'd be over here and then I'd be over there. By the time I got through with a hole of golf, I'd already walked a whole golf course. And so, yeah, probably not the sport for me. I'm not a sprinter. I'll be the slow go, but, yeah, basically that's one of the sports he participates in now. And, you know, wow. He's a hoot. That's the, you know, it's fun to watch people do crazy stuff like that. But, you know, to just actually meet someone who's got the world record at it, it's kind of awesome.
That is a riot. What a funny sport. I just love it.
And so, you know, we got into a couple of important things. I mean, you know, obviously with the two meals a day concept is something that I feel a little bit more confident I could do rather than the one meal a day. And it's only because I don't know that I could eat enough calories at one sitting comfortably. And, you know, to make sure that I'm still getting all the nutrition, the second meal would I'm going to have to do that. So effectively, when I eat, I intuitively end up eating two. Sometimes I'll have three meals in my, you know, 8 hour, 6 hour window. But, you know, easily two meals would work out very well for me.
Sure. Yeah. It seems a lot more doable and easy to plan out too. I like that concept.
Yeah. And then we got into the toxic food stuff and,
yes,
we've talked about sugar on this podcast. Actually, I think maybe even my second episode number two was about sugar. You know, so we know what sugar is doing to us. We know for the most part what bread is usually doing to almost all of us. And then, you know, the seed oils is an area where I probably don't talk about enough. And, you know, the worst part of it is the labeling on foods all the seed oils are going to have heart healthy on their label.
Yeah.
And, you know, because they're not saturated fat. And unfortunately, they're still horrible, horrible food for you to be putting in your body. But they managed to get to a point where they're marketing the healthy thing.
Mm-hmm.
It just breaks my heart, you know. Eat healthy canola oil. And I'm like, no.
It is really confusing. And that was hard for me too when I started keto, because you think of an oil that's derived from a plant or a seed. I mean, that sounds perfectly healthy. What could possibly be wrong? And then when you add the label onto it that says that it's heart healthy, what could be wrong? The government said that it's healthy. So how do you weed that out, you know? And it's taken a long time to unlearn some of these habits.
Yeah. And, you know, it does. It just, that kind of stuff just drives me nuts. You know, if you wanted to eat heart healthy, you're going to eat a lot of grains. You're going to eat a lot of those seed oils. And then the worst part of it is if you're going to try to go low fat otherwise, and what are they going to do? They're going to put sugar in the food to make it palatable.
Right.
So you're getting the trifecta of the bad toxic foods. Just trying to follow the guidelines that our government is so kind to put out there for us.
It's so crazy. Now, what kind of oils do you like to use when you're cooking? We've found good success with coconut oil. It's easy and it cooks well and it's got a good flavor.
Yeah, I use avocado oil some. I like to use coconut oil, particularly like if I'm going to make something that's more of an Asian style restaurant move. So like, let's say I'm going to stir fry some chicken and some vegetables, and then I'm going to try to make it into more of an Oriental flavor, or I'm going to put some coconut and curry. I'll use the coconut oil in that. If I'm going to make something that's going to be more of like a meat sauce or something like that, I'll just use the hamburger and I don't drain it. You know,
those
recipes
for sure.
drain the oil. I'm like,
no,
throw away half your food.
don't replace it with more oil. That's
like,
good stuff.
Like we're going to throw away half the egg because we don't want to eat the yolk. We're going to throw away the fat because we don't want fat. And I'm like, no, just put that in there. It's delicious. Mm-hmm. It's what makes hamburger taste good. When you take all that oil out, it tastes like dirt.
Yeah.
So I'll do that. And then like, if I'm going to use like an olive oil, I'll use it as a dressing, or I will sometimes, like if I've cooked a sauce, once I'm done cooking the sauce and now it's just kind of warm, heated, ready to go, I'll slather in some olive oil at that point to give it a little bit more oomph.
Yeah.
And then I love cooking with butter. I love cooking with butter. I'll get the Kerrygold or good quality butter. We've got two or three brands down here that they're grass-fed cows from Panama. Mm-hmm. And I assume they speak Spanish, but they make butter and it's a good butter. So we'll cook eggs with that. Sometimes like maybe we're going to have bacon and I cook the bacon in the pan. I may use some of the grease in the bacon and just cook it with that. I'm not afraid of saturated fat, because what I have found is saturated fat makes my HDL go up.
Mm.
And the ratio of total cholesterol to HDL improves when I'm eating saturated fat.
Okay.
If I take out the saturated fat, my HDL plummets.
Mm.
My LDL goes down maybe a little bit, but not enough to matter as far as the doctors are concerned. And my HDL is still relatively high. So my ratio of total to HDL is terrible.
Mm.
And so, I want to have the best markers I can have. I'm not worried about the total, because I could eliminate all of my HDL and still be over the number. And I've done, even when I did statins, my cholesterol was still over 250.
Mm.
And I can't get it any lower.
Mm-hmm.
So it is what it is. I just accept that. So, I'll use saturated fat. I eat fish regularly, so I'm getting some omega-3 oils from the fish.
Good.
Sometimes I will take krill oil if I'm not getting enough fish.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go ahead and take some krill oil and get some more in there. But you know, most of what I'm eating are grass-fed beef. So there's some, you know, good fats, as far as I'm concerned, good fats in there because it's grass-fed, grass-finished. So that saturated fat is actually not bad for me. Eggs, again, pastured eggs, that fat I don't think is bad for me. And then cooking-wise, yeah, avocado oil, olive oil once it's already cooked because I'm not going to cook with olive oil. And then just plain old butter.
That sounds great. That's about what we use in the at our house as well. The coconut oil, avocado, occasionally olive, but not often. And of course, we also have butter. And I also have a little can of ghee, which I use that on occasion as well. So that sounds good. Yeah, the other thing Brad mentioned, which I have to say I kind of geeked out about, was micro workouts. I really liked his idea of, well, he mentioned doing a minute here, a minute there, you know, push-ups or squats and lifts and whatnot. But I tell all my friends that if you're struggling with motivation, you're not feeling it, do half a workout or go out for 1 mile. You don't have to spend 2 hours at the gym. If you just take 5 or 10 minutes and get a little fresh air or do something that gets your heart rate up, I mean, that's enough to move for that day.
Yeah. There used to be this kind of mantra that you needed to have your heart rate up in the cardio zone for at least 24 minutes. And apparently there was a study, but the doctors, you know, they've done the science and they're kind of like, no, you're going to get the same benefit doing five minute workouts as you would doing a 25 minute workout. So just anything that's going to get your heart rate up for just even 5 minutes is going to be beneficial. And actually one of the other things I really like about micro workouts is that there's something that you can spread movement throughout the day. So, you know, if you go to work and you think I'm going to sit at the desk for a solid 4 hours, then I'm going to have lunch and then I'm going to sit at the desk for another 5 hours and not move during that period of time other than an occasional toilet break or get some coffee. You're sitting still. And, you know, whereas if you, when you got up to get that coffee, you know, just did some jumping jacks or, you know, some body weight squats or a couple push-ups and then, you know, you move around, you're just, energy level is going to go up and you might find you don't actually need that coffee.
Right. Yeah. Just get your blood pumping, get a little fresh air, and that might be enough to energize you for the rest of the afternoon.
And there's another part of the micro workout theme that I like. So sometimes we wake up in the morning, we're kind of like, ugh, I really don't feel like running. You know, I don't feel like it. And then we force ourselves to do it. But, you know, but I got to do it. I got to have my streak intact. I got to do it. And we get out there and this very unfortunate thing happens is that our bodies were actually fatigued. We had not recovered properly from our workouts. And because maybe because we weren't fueling right, maybe because we weren't sleeping right, maybe because we're just doing too much too soon, we're not recovered. And because we didn't listen to our body, we're doing more harm than good. So, you know, looking at it from a micro workout, you get there and say, I really don't want to do this. But then you say, I'll do it for 5 minutes.
Yes.
And if after that 5 minutes, you're not feeling it, stop. Please stop. Your body was talking to you and you were ignoring it or trying to override it with reason. You know, and imploring to your body, please do this when the body really did need recovery time. So, but if you can get out there for 5 minutes, you've got the benefit of that 5 minutes and you're not overtraining. And then a lot of people, you just start it. You're like, I started my route and I, you know, ran out 2 minutes and I'm going to run back 2 minutes or, and then sometimes you just realize, I want to keep running. I don't actually want to stop now. And you get your full workout in because that's what you needed to do. But, so micro workouts kind of have two functions. One is that you're breaking up the work into smaller portions, which sometimes makes it easier to fit into a busy day.
Right.
And then the other thing is micro workouts can kind of be that strategy to get you started. Okay, I'm at least going to do 5 minutes and then if I'm done, I'm done. You know, and you can listen to your body as you put it through the paces. And I just know when I ran a lot, I hated the first 2 or 3 minutes of running. I just, I hate it. I'm like, you start going and it's like, man, it's just sucks. Yeah. And then something clicks on when your body warms up, and then it feels good.
That's true. Some of us like to say the first mile is a liar, and that you feel that this isn't right. I got to shake out the cobwebs. I'm not feeling it today. But then once you get that first mile under your belt, sometimes it just the second and third, or however long you're out there, they just fly right by. So sometimes the first mile is a liar. Sometimes it's the first 5 minutes of a workout that's a liar. But yeah, if you could just do something, it's better than nothing. And Brad had mentioned, you know, if you're sitting there watching TV at night, do some push-ups during the commercials and then do some sit-ups during the next commercial. I mean, just these little movements throughout the day, it's always better than nothing at all.
Absolutely. And, you know, with the commercials the way they are today, I mean, a 30-minute program has 8 minutes of commercials.
Just about, yes. Pretty
you
much.
You don't have to watch too much TV and you've got an hour of workouts done.
Yep.
You know, half an hour anyway. Watching a couple hours of TV, you know, 16, yeah. You got half an hour right there just watching 2 hours of TV. Mm-hmm. So if it's a popular program, because when they first start out, they don't. And I see this because I watch stuff on Netflix and I'll see a show the first year it came out and you know, they have basically 5 to 6 minutes of commercials. And then by the time they get to their fifth or sixth season, it's up to over 8 minutes of commercials. You know, because I'm flipping through these shows. I'm like, how did I just watch 5 shows on Netflix in an hour? And I'm like, all those damn commercials that I'm not having to watch.
Right? So. Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, Netflix is a little different as far as if you're going to be doing them because they don't have the advertisements, the commercials, but you watch half the show or watch the show and then do the work before you start that next episode.
That's right. That's a good plan.
All right, Rachel. Well, anything else you want to go over before we cut out?
No, that was great. Great conversation.
All right. Well, we'll talk next week.
You bet. Take care.
Next time on the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet Dr. Herman Pontzer and discuss his book, Burn. New research blows the lid off of how we really burn calories, lose weight, and stay healthy. Until then, have a happy and healthy week.